Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Since its inception in 1995, Zeta Talk has primarily, as its prime message, warned of the passage of a large rogue planet. They call this Planet X, although it comes by many different names. They have described this as having a sling orbit rather than an circular or elliptical orbit. The reason for this is Planet X has two focuses. Two suns that it passes by. The very start of the solar system coming out of the Big Bang, this large planet assumed this orbit, slinging like a pendulum past both these suns, and has never been able to get out of that. It's trapped. Our other planets in our solar system were attracted and close to only one sun, our sun, and do not have that sling orbit. It's a very unusual orbit. This second sun, or second foci, is dark. It's never lit, which is the reason we don't see it. The Zetas say it's 18.74 sun-Pluto distances out from our sun, in the direction of Orion. And in fact, our long-period comets and even our outer planets all lean in that direction as though there is a second gravity force out there. This particular planet, Planet X, makes a pendulum swing per the Zetas every 3,657 years. The pendulum swing spends most of its time at the midpoint, which the Zetas call a dither, where it's very slowly moving with momentum toward the sun that it's approaching. At a certain point, this momentum picks up because it gets close enough to that sun that the gravity pull increases and settles the dither. And Planet X then starts moving rapidly toward that sun, picks up speed, zooms toward it by the gravity pull, does not strike it due to a gravity repulsion force, which is, in fact, what keeps all of our planets from falling into the sun and our moon from falling to Earth. So it skids by this sun and flings on beyond it, and then turns around with both of its gravity pulls behind it and slings like a pendulum back toward the sun it just passed, zooms to the midpoint, dithers and hovers, and then passes the second sun or foci in the same manner. Now, during its passages, this large planet causes pole shifts on Earth. The reason for that is it's a big magnet. Earth is a magnet. But this planet is 4 times the diameter of the Earth and 23 times as massive. There's no contest. When it comes in, it finds that it must align with the sun's magnetic flow lines. We, in fact, on Earth and Mercury and the other planets lining up along the ecliptic plane that is around the sun's middle, just like Saturn's rings are around its middle, have our north and south static and lean in the same direction as Mercury, which happens to be the same direction as the sun is leaning in magnetically. Never mind that NASA tells you that the sun flips its poles every 11 years. Their own Ulysses probe disproved that. It went by the sun in 1994, and it found north up, south down, and then NASA announced in the year 2000 that based on the appearances of sunspots and what they call a solar maximum or minimum, flipping around of plumes on the surface of the sun, they said, it has flipped its poles. And then their own Ulysses probe went around a year later in 2001 and found that the magnetic alliance was the same. North was up, south was down. but you are still going to be taught in school otherwise, that it flips every 11 years. So the sun is the dominant magnet in our solar system. The magnetic flow lines coming out of its north pole and wrapping around into the south pole. And magnets like to line up side by side or end to end. But since the planets are stuck in the midpoint, the ecliptic, or as with Saturn, where the rings would be if the sun had rings, we line up and down, side by side with the sun. But planet X, as it comes in, assumes a position along the magnetic flow lines. And as it's coming in from a 32-degree angle in from Orion, the direction of Orion, it's below the sun's middle, and it must cross the sun's middle and then zoom on out in its slim orbit. And in doing so, it flies over the head of the Earth. Meanwhile, planet X, as it's doing this close passage around the sun, is moving along the sun's magnetic flow lines, which below the sun's middle are such that its north pole must be pointing toward the sun, but when it's above the sun's middle are such that its north pole must be pointing away from the sun. So it's flipping around. And as it passes our Earth, it grips our Earth, which is a small magnet compared to itself, planet X being a very large magnet, and causes us to tip in space. It's really a crust shift. Our crust shifts, and the liquid core of the Earth realigns with the magnetic solar system. Meanwhile, our crust is in a new position. This is why we have wandering poles, why there's all this rumor about ice ages, where the North Pole seems to just sort of land over Wisconsin, or land over France. Why it's found that under the ice core of Antarctica, there's evidence of tropical plants once having grown on that land. That's the answer. And it's Hapgood's theory of sliding crust. Hapgood was espoused by Einstein, who said that Hapgood had the best explanation for these geological evidences which have puzzled our scientists. Planet X is 4 times the diameter of Earth and 23 times as massive. That's the size difference. Well, why can't we see it? It's currently in our solar system, very close to the sun, creeping past the sun. And I'm speaking in the year 2005 when I'm recording this lecture. The reason for that is it has a huge dust cloud, magnetized red iron oxide dust, and it shrouds planet X. Of course it would. If you put a magnet on a glass and sprinkle iron shavings around it, and tap that glass, it forms a magnetic field around that magnet. So this huge tail not only has dust in it, but it also has dozens of moons which travel behind planet X because it is a traveling planet. They don't go round and round, so it's moving rapidly through space at times in its passage or sling orbit. These moons trail behind it, and they become a swirl in and of themselves. They go into a dance, which is like a swirl, long tube-like swirl in some cases. A lot of debris, rocks, gravel, and the like. Where did all those moons and that debris come from? Well, take a look at the asteroid belt. At one time, per the Zetas, this rogue planet went through that place when it passed the sun. The sun in those days was larger and more massive, and the gravity repulsion force thus kept planet X at a greater distance when it made its passages. Now it comes past the sun within our orbit, between the Earth and the sun, because the sun has shrunk over the eons, burning itself up. So, when planet X went through the asteroid belt, its whatever was traveling behind it, caught in its gravity field, its moons, in other words, would slam into a number of minor planets. The Zetas say there was a couple of dozen small planets in the asteroid belt, like we have Pluto, Uranus, Mercury, etc. And many of them were water planets, and they got slammed to pieces. They became dust and asteroids. A lot of that dust is trailing after Planet X, having been caught in its magnetized magnetic and gravity field. Many of our comets that we see slinging in and around the sun are from those original collisions, and the water clinging to a few pieces of asteroid. Comets in the main, with their beautiful outgassing streams, it's primarily water vapor. That's where all that came from. So because Planet X is shrouded by this dust, and it stands very close to the sun, or between us and the sun in many cases, we can't see it because it's like looking into a fog bank. The sun's light, in fact, hits the backside of that shrouded planet, all that dust, and reflects back toward the sun. So what we see is, in fact, a dim spot rather than a bright spot. But in 2003, when it was roaring into the solar system, and it was behind the sun during our summertime, we had very dramatic second sun sightings, because the sun's light at that time was casting toward Planet X in its dust cloud and reflecting back toward Earth. And many people would say, many reports, they saw two suns rising. They saw two suns setting. And this was showing up even on TV, where the weatherman would be stunned by what he was seeing. With live video behind him. During this passage, this large magnet causes this tipping in space, the crust shifting, and as the crust stops shifting, all these plates slam into each other. We have earthquakes, tidal waves, volcanic explosions, and for those humans who survive, a new geography and a new climate afterwards. What do other prophecies and legends tell us about this monster planet, Planet X, and its anticipated passage? The ancient Sumerians were aware of this planet. They called it Nibiru, or Nibiru. Zechariah Sitchin documented much of this ancient Sumerian knowledge in a series of books, including the book called The Twelfth Planet. Why the twelfth planet? Apparently the ancient Sumerians counted our moon as a planet, as well as this traveling planet. So therefore, since we have nine planets and a moon and a sun, this 12th planet was Planet X, Nibiru, the traveling planet. I quote, "The Mesopotamian and biblical sources present strong evidence that the orbital period of the 12th planet is 3,600 years. The number 3,600 was written in Sumerian as a large circle. The epitaph for the planet, Shar, also meant a perfect circle or a completed cycle. It also meant the number 3,600. The identity of the three terms, planet, orbit, and 3,600, could not be a mere coincidence. The reign periods are also perfect multiples of 3,600-year Shar. The conclusion that suggests itself is that these Shars of rulership were related to the orbital period Shar, 3,600 years. That quote was from Zechariah Sitchin's book, The Twelfth Planet. Why rulerships? There are hominoids on this large traveling planet who at one time mined for gold on Earth, known as the giants of yore. David and Goliath, for instance. Who was Goliath, one of these giants? They're of legend, building pyramids, enslaved man for mining, and until man became numerous enough that rebellions were setting up on Earth, they mined for gold here, then moved to Mars, and are still in our solar system mining for gold. Gold is needed by this traveling planet to help retain the heat and light in its atmosphere. Planet X is a brown, smoldering brown dwarf, not one of these brown dwarfs that is the size of Jupiter, but in fact, our astronomers have no term that fits this traveling planet. It's a planet and a smoldering sun. It emits light from its deep crevasses under its oceans, that this light bouncing around in its atmosphere and heat also. So it has its own heat and light and does not need a sun. But gold in the atmosphere, gold dust in the atmosphere, helped them retain their heat and light. NASA, of course, calls this rogue traveling planet Planet X. That's where the term comes from. They went looking for it in the early 1980s, looking for what gravity pull was tugging our outer planets in the direction of Orion, perturbing them in that direction. They sent a balloon up, infrared equipment, above the atmosphere and pointed it in that direction. And in 1983, they found it, and I quote, "A heavenly body, possibly so close to Earth that it could be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. Infrared Astronomical Satellite. So mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it is a planet. So close, in fact, that it would be the nearest heavenly body to Earth beyond the outermost planet Pluto." That was a quote from the December 31st, 1983, front page article in the Washington Post. In 1983, the subject of the Pioneer probes could still be openly discussed. This was because until the discovery of this planet, the possibility of an outer planet, Planet X, being out there and potentially moving toward us for a passage, which our geology speaks to and our mythology speaks to, was not considered terribly threatening. But once it was discovered, a cover-up ensued and all discussion stopped. That blanket suppression is still with us. Astronomers find they can't talk about it. They're not allowed to. They're under a national security oath. Observatories staffed by astronomers, all these people who take a national security oath, they're part of the cover-up. But prior to 1983, discussing why the Pioneer probes were sent up, Pioneer 10 and 11, was still allowed to be discussed and even articles published. Guess what? In the New Science and Invention Encyclopedia, there's an article about the pioneers and a graph, a diagram. And this shows the Sun, our solar system, including the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, etc., which direction the pioneers go in, Pioneer 11 going in one, Pioneer 10 in another, so that they're exiting the solar system in a manner that would allow both of them to triangulate the position of Planet X that was being sought after by the infrared scope up above the atmosphere in the balloon. And this diagram shows that dead star, that unlit star, the one that our Sun is a binary with, and the 10th planet. They're calling it the 10th planet because truly it is, if we don't count the Sun and the Moon to make it the 12th planet, as the ancient Sumerians did. And there they are on the diagram, the 10th planet, which they say is 4.7 billion miles from the Sun, and the dead star, the second foci, which they say is 50 billion miles out. Well, where'd that come from? Another indication that prior to 1983, this subject matter was freely discussed is an article that appeared in the New York Times, and I quote, "Something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits." This is from a January 30th, 1983 New York Times article. That was early in the year in 1983. And it was discovered later in the year in 1983, reported by the Washington Post on December 31st, 1983, and thereafter the blanket, the cover-up, dropped. Immanuel Velikovsky, who documented many legends as well as researching geological changes, the pole shifts of the past and what record it left in our surface of our Earth, wrote in his book, Worlds in Collision, and I quote, "In the middle of the second millennium before the present era, the Earth underwent one of the greatest catastrophes in its history. A celestial body came very close to the Earth. The account of this catastrophe can be constructed from evidence supplied by a large number of documents. The comet touched the Earth first with its gaseous tail. Servius wrote, it was not of a flaming, but of a bloody redness. This is from Emanuel Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision. The middle of the second millennium, by the way, was approximately 3,500 years ago, or pretty darn close to 3,600 years ago. It was the time of the Jewish Exodus. What do legends tell us about the appearance of this passing planet, this rogue planet, Planet X? In 1882, there was an Ohio dentist who did a channeled work called the Awashbi. He wrote it in the style of the Bible because he wanted his neighbors to read it, and he felt if that was a biblical style, they might be pulled in. And I quote, I, Son of God, trained in the change and tumult of corporal worlds, proclaim my decrees of the red star and her heavens in the clash of her rebellious sides, for I will harvest. A wave of breath speedeth forth in the broad firmament. The red star flieth toward the point of my whetted sword. Fly with all speed where first the red star's vortex gathered up its nebulae millions of years agone, and on the way say, God hath decreed a pruning knife to a traveling world. This quote was from the Awashbi. Note the correlations. Here they call it the red star. Here they reference the coalescing of planets coming out of the Big Bang. In other words, gathered up its nebulae millions of years agone. They confirm the red appearance, calling it the red star. They confirm a magnetic clash causing a pole shift in the Earth. In other words, the clash of her rebellious sides. They also confirm the devastation that a pole shift has on the Earth, which our history tells us, both in mythology and geology, the change and tumult of corporal worlds. Pruning knife, what is that referring to? Atlantis went down during a pole shift. The flood occurred during a pole shift. Great die-off in the population. Devastation to existing civilizations, which must now start anew. All of this confirmed in these few phrases from the Awashbi, a wonderful book, a little difficult to read, I must say. The Colbran calls this traveling planet the Destroyer, yet another term. The Colbran is a parallel Bible that was preserved in Scotland by the Glastonbury Monastery and thence made its way to New Zealand, where it got published. But very few were aware of it, very few read it, until very recently, Marshall Masters of the Yowza, Y-O-W-U-S-A, website has made it available as an e-book for $4.95, a very good buy, huge book, lots of information. And I quote, men forget the days of the Destroyer, only the wise know where it went and that it will return in its appointed hour. Called the Destroyer, in color it was bright and fiery, in appearance changing and unstable, a fiery body of flame. And this was a quote from the Colbran. Now, the correlation we have here, the Destroyer, doesn't that imply that it does devastation to the world? Very few know where it went and when it will return. Well, with a sling orbit that happens only once every 3,657 years, signs in the sky and the like, unless somebody had recorded information that passed forward, how would a new tribe or a new civilization coming up on Earth know that information? Why did NASA go out and look for 1983? Because they had bits and pieces from legend, but they didn't have a clear calendar. Color, it was bright and fiery. Once again, the red appearance, the writhing red fire dragon. In the Bible, this planet is traveling planet is called Wormwood, and I have a quote from Revelations. A great red dragon having seven heads and ten horns, and seven crowns upon his heads. That was a quote from Revelations. Now, what are we hearing here? It's red-colored. It has a dragon appearance, writhing, and it has many streams coming out of it. Remember earlier when I was mentioning the moon swirls around this because of the dust cloud and the many moons that travel behind Planet X and get into a dance that are swirling with each other, round and round in long tube-shaped swirls, which actually show up in photographs which we have captured, and I have on my Zeta Talk website in the photos section, moon swirls. Here we have a reference to them. What would cause seven heads and horns and the like during a passage, except that dust cloud in swirling tubes of moons? This planet is called Marduk by the ancient Babylonians. Here's a quote from Andy Lloyd's Dark Star website. There is a clear trinity of celestial objects on this stella, toward the top, the sun, the moon, and a third radiant planet. Note the presence of the Babylonian deity Marduk further down the stella, a deity closely associated with Nibiru. It is interesting to compare this image with a later alchemical dragon, Azoth, with his two suns and a moon shown to the left. The parallels are even closer when you bear in mind the presence of the dragon or serpent itself. This was a quote from Andy Lloyd's Dark Star website. Fascinating stella. It's an image, colorful. I recommend anyone going there and checking it out. You see a dragon at the bottom part with wings. Pointed in a direction, left to right. Little wings at the back of his heels, meaning he flies, he moves. Huge tail, curling up over his head. Interesting thing is there's a correlation in the shape of this tail as it twists around to many crop circles we're seeing today that have a kind of a wobbling, wavering line that looks like a snake and coiling in like a more than a 180, more like a 270 coil and another 270 coil, and then coming out and waving again. Zeta Talk has stated that Planet X, as it rushes close to the sun and is aligned along the magnetic flow lines and has to flip, you know, from pointing its north pole toward the sun's south pole as it goes over the sun's middle and is aligning with the magnetic flow lines above the ecliptic, it has to flip to turn its north pole away from the sun to not be in competition with the sun's north pole. And that's quite a twist. And they've called this the 270 rule. Well, this stella shows that. Coming out of the head of this dragon are three horns, quite tall, and we see two suns and the moon. The moon is looking away from our main sun, which is in the center. Interesting correlation here. The moon's orbit, since early 2004, has been very irregular, where it's trying to avoid, it's either too far north or too far south as we look at it. And it's almost as though it's trying to avoid the Earth's middle, a crowded place. Sun's middle is crowded with Planet X being in it. The Earth's middle, aligned up and down, out from Planet X, from the Sun, is also finding that middle ground crowded. And the Moon is trying to be too far north and too far south in its orbit around us to avoid that. Well, this stella shows that avoidance. So the moon is to the left, looking away from the sun and Planet X, and over on the right we have Planet X, again symbolized by three points around it, another crop circle correlation. So what are we told in prophecy and legend about what to look for? When will the passage happen? How do we know it's pending? What are the signs? Vilikowski wrote a series of books, started with Ages and Chaos, in which he described legends talking about planetary collisions, what seemed to be that. Came up under so much ridicule for this because it was such a threatening subject. I hate to use a pun, but Vilikowski was vilified. that he wrote a second book called Earth in Upheaval. Here he documented the what's recorded in the Earth's crust, the geology of the Earth. When did we have continents tearing apart? Something similar to a record worldwide approximately 3,600 years ago where the oceans of the world all dropped 16 to 20 feet simultaneously. Beaches high and dry where the water used to, you know, the waves used to wash approximately 20 feet higher, where did that water go? Well, it had to have dropped into, for instance, the Atlantic rift where the continents are pulling apart, deep ocean rifts, something that affected the entire globe, which shares the oceans, truly. So in his third book, Worlds in Collision, he talks about many legends that report these geological catastrophes that have happened in the past. Terrific book. I got it and could not put it down. Any of his books. I read them cover to cover. Fascinating. Correlations from around the world. Here's an example in Velikovsky's book, Worlds in Collision. And I quote, Sahagun, the Spanish savant who came to America a generation after Columbus and gathered the traditions of the Aborigines, wrote that at the time of one cosmic catastrophe, the sun rose only a little way over the horizon and remained there without moving. The moon also stood still. The biblical stories were not known to the Aborigines. Also, the tradition preserved by the Sahagun bears no trace of having been introduced by the missionaries. This is a quote from Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision. Here we hear that he's reporting that the Indians, first being contacted by white men from Europe, had a parallel to the Bible, which came from the Middle East. The Bible reports Joshua's battle, the sun stood still. Well, and the west coast of the Americas, they're reporting a long night in which the world was no longer rotating. When they say the moon stood still, of course the moon is not zipping around us every 24 hours. We are turning underneath it. It does indeed go round us every 28 days. But the reason the moon seems to pass over the sky during the night or during the day is because we're moving under it. So for the moon to have stood still, the earth stopped rotating. And they're saying the sun rose and froze on the horizon, early dawn. And over in Egypt is reported Joshua's battle, the sun stood still overhead. So rotation stopping is one of the signs. Here's another example. There is in Islamic literature a number of Islamic texts, references in prophecy to what we can expect. This from the 12th Iman, and I quote, "The rising of the sun from the west is one of the things which must happen. Between the decline of the sun at noon and the time of the afternoon prayer, the sun will remain still." This was a quote from the 12th Iman. Now, here again, it's talking about rotation stoppage. But in that part of the globe, the Middle East, the sun is more directly overhead when rotation stops. That's why at noon or to the afternoon prayer, early afternoon, that's where they see the position of the sun. What's this business about the sun rising from the west? Well, Zeta Talk has gone into that, talking about the 3 days of darkness and the sun rising from the west. During the time Planet X is passing close to the sun and tugging along its magnetic flow lines, as I've mentioned, it's below the sun's middle and therefore its north pole points toward the sun's south pole. But as it crosses that midline to align with magnetic flow lines coming near the north pole of the sun, it has to switch its north pole away because north poles of magnets simply do not point toward each other. The magnetic particles flow out of the North Poles, just try it. Take two magnets and try to get those North Poles pointing at each other. You cannot do it. Very strong force. So, what happens when it switches its North Pole from pointing at the Sun, round in place, to pointing it out away from the Sun, meanwhile, kind of pointing it toward the Earth like a hose of magnetic particles? So what happens to our North Pole? It leans away from that blast of magnetic particles. Leaning away, for people in the Northern Hemisphere, I believe that sounds like 3 days of darkness. They're not seeing as much of the Sun. Legend has it that you can see a glow coming over the horizon, but you do not see the Sun. Sunrise west? Well, because of the curve of the globe and because of the way people actually view outward from the surface of the Earth, the Sun appears to rise just a little bit to the west of the North Pole and then swing over to the east or more overhead during those days after that 3 days of darkness. The reason for this is people on the globe are like porcupine quills coming out of the globe. There is no up or down. There's only overhead from the viewpoint of every person. And the globe is such that you begin to see the glow of the Sun as you look over the North Pole before the Sun actually comes into view, thus sunrise west. Here's another description from Islamic texts, the Hadiths, and I quote, "The hour will not be established till the sun rises from the west. Look at that time for a violent wind, an earthquake, being swallowed up by the earth, pelting rain, and signs following one another like bits of a necklace falling one after the other when its string is cut." And this was a quote from the Hadiths. Here again, we have a reference to the sun rising from the west, and this being the start of a very tumultuous time. The Zetas have described a week of rotation stoppage, in fact, 5.9 days, followed by a pole shift which happens within an hour. But preceding that rotation stoppage, we have those 6 days of sunrise west, according to Islamic texts, and 3 days of darkness according to biblical text. And we have to add a little time in there for the earth to slow to a stop as it's rotating. This all seems to sound like about two or three very awful weeks in which there would be no question that a pole shift was pending. Beyond the appearance of Planet X like a writhing dragon in the sky is red dust from the tail. Both legend of things that have happened in the past and prophecy report this. In the Bible, in the book of Revelations, we're warned that the rivers will turn blood red. And in the book of Exodus, which describes the time of the Jewish Exodus, approximately 1600 before Christ, or 3,600 years ago, that the rivers ran blood red. And when Moses escaped through the Red Sea, presumably, that body of water was colored by this red iron oxide dust also. Why else would this sea be called the Red Sea, as it's not red today? Now, Villikowski, in his book Worlds in Collision, also documented many descriptions of this red dust and its effect on bodies of water during the passage. And I quote, "One of the first visible signs of this encounter was the reddening of the earth's surface by a fine dust of rusty pigment. In sea, lake, and river, this pigment gave a bloody coloring to the water. Because of these particles of ferruginous and other soluble pigment, the world turned red." This was from Villikowski's Worlds in Collision. At another point, he describes what the Mayans saw in the Western Hemisphere, and I quote, "The manuscript Kishi of the Mayan tells that in the Western Hemisphere, in the days of a great cataclysm, when the earth quaked and the sun's motion was interrupted, the water in the rivers turned to blood. This was again a quote from Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision. So here we have on the other side of the world, western part of the Americas, in the Mayas, Central America, experiencing, that's a big tale. It's wafting and wrapping around the globe because the North Pole is pointing toward us. And presumably this magnetized dust cloud is wafting away from the North Pole of Planet X toward us. And we're just being assaulted, you know, by debris and red dust coming down from this tail. What do legends and prophecies tell us we'll experience during the pole shift itself, that dreaded hour? Buddhist texts speak to this. I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce this name, but I'll give it a try. Visuddhimagga, a Buddhist text, states, and I quote, "When a world cycle is destroyed by wind, first it raises a fine dust, then coarse dust, then fine sand, then coarse sand, then grit, stones, up to boulders as large as trees." And that was a quote from a Buddhist text. Well, that sounds like hurricane force winds, at least. And in fact, Zeta Talk does say that the entire world will experience hurricane force winds. Now, why would this be? Well, as the globe is turning, the crust turning, the atmosphere does not turn with the crust. And this creates a wind coming from the direction of the turn. And since it happens within an hour, you turn the globe, say, 90 degrees in an hour, that's moving a lot of air mass over the crust, or crust under the air mass, however you want to describe it. And that's our hurricane force winds. And the entire globe participates in this. There will be no place on the globe where there will not be these winds or where there will not be earthquakes, because when the crust stops moving, all the plates are slamming into each other and every one of them is getting blammed. So there is no place where we will not have this effect happening of high wind and heavy earthquakes. Now, interestingly enough, Pope John Paul, our last pope, who recently died, was apparently aware that the Fatima III secret was other than what was reported. In 1980, according to a Newsweek article dated January of 2005, in 1980, the Pope spoke to a German audience, and I quote, "It should be sufficient for all Christians to know this much. If there is a message in which it is said that the oceans will flood entire sections of the earth, that from one moment to the other millions of people will perish, there is no longer any point in really wanting to publish this secret message." And I end the quote from Newsmax. What's he talking about here? He's talking about huge tidal waves rolling inland, sloshing water inundated. And this is another thing that Zeta Talk has mentioned, accompanies the pole shift. In this 90-degree turn, water likewise does not need to move with the crust, but wishes to stand still. I often explain this as a soup bowl explanation. If you're holding a bowl of soup and you move it quickly, you may have soup on your shoe because the water, the soup, does not need to move with the bowl. It is an independent entity. So if we're moving the crust 90 degrees and the water does not necessarily want to go along, that's a lot of water sloshing up inland, moving hundreds of miles inland in some cases, rolling like a slow tide, just keeps rising and rising. Not a high wave, you know, as tall as a skyscraper crashing down, but like a tide that doesn't stop, it just keeps coming in. And general guideline from Zeta Talk is to be 100 miles inland and 200 feet up, but depending on where you are, whether tidal bore will be affected, whether the water will have no blocks so that it just can keep flowing inland like moving over the flatlands of Texas, it'll come in a lot farther than 100 miles and perhaps a lot higher than 200 feet. We also hear again from Velikovsky in his book Worlds in Collision about such tidal waves, and I quote, "The traditions of the people of Peru tell that for a period of time, the sun was not in the sky, and then the ocean left the shore and with a terrible din broke over the continent. The Choctaw Indians of Oklahoma relate, the earth was plunged in darkness for a long time. Finally, a dark light appeared in the north, but it was a mountain-high wave, rapidly coming nearer. According to the Lapland epic, after the seawall fell on the continent, gigantic waves continued to roll and dead bodies were dashed about in the dark waters." End of the quote from Worlds in Collision. Oh, here we have a relationship over these rolling tidal waves coming inland to the time of extended darkness in the Northern Hemisphere, the 3 days of darkness that the Bible mentions, the 6 days of sunrise west mentioned in Islamic texts, and both of these incidences confirmed by Zeta Talk, described in great detail how 3 days of sunrise west, or pardon me, 6 days of sunrise west and 3 days of darkness could occur. We have a confirmation that the pole shift happened very closely after this time of darkness on the Northern Hemisphere. Once again, we hear from Plato. In his Politicus, he stated, and I quote, "At certain times the universe has its present circular motion, and at other times it revolves in the reverse direction. There is at that time great destruction of animals in general, and only a small part of the human race survives." This was a quote from Plato's Politicus. Now, what's he talking about? Orbiting in a different direction, revolving in a different direction? Well, if the sun is to rise in the east and set in the west, and you see it rising slightly to the west and remaining overhead and sort of rising and setting near the North Pole, it can be very confusing. I'm not sure just what he was referring to here. Plato apparently got his information from the Egyptians, specifically from a great Egyptian astronomer, Herodotus. So something's lost in translation here for me, but certainly this sounds like a disturbed rotation of the globe during a time of pole shift. And once again, the devastation to civilizations, to life on Earth, to creatures, human or otherwise, not in a safe enough location to escape these rolling tidal waves, perhaps in a position, you know, where they can be killed by great earthquakes or exploding volcanoes. So, or perhaps they were in a temperate land which suddenly became a pole and froze over quickly, like the mammoths and the mastodons, which are found in the polar circle, and Wrangell Island up there, flash frozen apparently, so that the flesh never spoiled, and what do you know, they have green grass in their tummy, spring flowers between their teeth, that type of thing. So these big elephants didn't, you know, rumble north several hundred miles because they were frightened by a mouse. Their Siberian grasslands moved up, you know, into the polar circle, and they were frozen. So that also is a reason for extinction during pole shifts. What does this mean besides red dust and tidal waves rolling in? Well, it surely means earthquakes. This is described in Edgar Cayce, in one of his readings, where he was asked about the pole shift on more than one occasion. Remarkable correlation to the December 26, 2004 tsunami, in which we had at first an 8.1 and an 8.2 quake very close to the South Pole down there in Tasmania in Auckland. And within, that was on December 23rd, and within a couple of days we have the big one in Sumatra, which some people are saying was as large as a 9.5. Huge tear and the tsunami, which everybody saw on TV, that fateful day. Well, Edgar Cayce spoke to this in his reading of 311-8 on April 9, 1932, and I quote, "How soon will the changes in the Earth's activity begin to be apparent?" And his answer was, "When there is the first breaking up of some conditions in the South Sea, and those as apparent in the sinking or rising of that that's almost opposite same, or in the Mediterranean and the Etna area, then we may know it has begun." End of quote from Edgar Cayce's reading 311-8, dated April 9, 1932. Fascinating that shortly after this tsunami earthquake, I got reports from people in Italy, on the coast of Spain, that the Mediterranean seemed to be dropping. Venice was high and dry. Barcelona beaches were high and dry. How can that be when the Mediterranean is attached to the Atlantic? Was everyone along the Atlantic experiencing this? That, you know, their beaches were high and dry? And water seeks its level. Well, the answer, of course, is that the Mediterranean floor was heaving or rising. And what did Cayce say? Breaking up of conditions in the South Sea, there we have it, down near Auckland and Tasmania, very close to the South Pole. And opposite that, actually it's not straight through the globe, but kind of glancing off the core, more like 140 degrees rather than 180, but pretty close to opposite. We have the Mediterranean heaving where the rising and sinking floor. Cayce actually seemed to be predicting a pole shift in 2001. I would actually read take his reading in more than one way. Let me read it to you and see what you conclude. From his reading 826-8, dated August 11th, 1936, and I quote, "What great change, or the beginning of what change, if any, is to take place in the earth in the year 2000 to 2001 A.D.? And his answer, "When there is a shifting of the poles, or a new cycle begins." End of quote from Edgar Cayce's reading 826-8, dated August 11th, 1936. So he's saying the shifting of the poles should begin in 2000 or 2001. Well, Zeta Talk said shortly after May 15th, 2003, and that they were wrong also for various reasons, but we'll surely have it in our future, pending. Aspect that I have not addressed is the retrograde orbit and rotation of planet X. As it comes in from Orion, it encounters what the Zetas have called sweeping arms of the Sun. Why do all the planets in our solar system all move in the same direction? They're all moving counterclockwise. This is considered the normal motion around. Now, some of these planets move faster than others, so they make a couple of orbits around the Sun. Like Mars is twice as slow as we are. So there are times when we look out toward Mars and it seems to be moving in a retrograde motion, but that's just because our traffic lane is faster and we're passing it. But we all move in a counterclockwise motion if you're above the Sun looking down at the solar system. The sweeping arms of the Sun are, you know, particle flows that are pressure line kind of, bumping us all from behind, move in this direction, move in this direction. And we do. We're all synced to the Sun. Planet X comes in and encounters these sweeping lines from the Sun way out beyond Pluto. And according to the Zetas, the first thing it does is skip them. It finds by jumping rope, it gets rid of that line instead of swept in front of it. Because it's a big planet and the sweeping lines are, they diminish when they get away from the Sun, it finds it just hops that line. So, moving clockwise, hop. And little by little with these hops, it begins momentum clockwise, so that when it gets close to the sun, that momentum of hopping the sweeping arms is how it deals with those sweeping arms. So it's coming in retrograde, which in fact is something of legend. Legend talks about this planet, the planet of the passage, assuming a retrograde orbit. Here's what the Zetas have to say about where we are with Planet X at the current time. Signs of Change, written in July 2005, and I quote, "The sling orbit of Planet X is confusing to many because it is so at odds to the normal orbit pattern. In a sling orbit, Planet X comes in straight line toward the Sun, slides by the Sun, and picks up speed again in a straight line after passing the Sun. Then there is the aspect of its retrograde motion, opposite to what all the other planets in the solar system take. Planet X, in its retrograde orbit, is heading toward the other planets rather than moving in the same direction. This clash in the direction of orbit was responsible for Earth halting in her orbit when she encountered Planet X in her path. This clash, combined with the crowding of particles that emerge from the Sun behind Planet X, is also responsible for the Earth being trapped in an eddy flow of particles that come round the sides of Planet X. As Planet X proceeds slowly, sliding around the Sun, it is pushing the Earth in front of it, as the Earth cannot escape this eddy flow. Sling orbit, retrograde rotation are involved. Planet X not only passing the Sun in a retrograde orbit, it rotates in a retrograde manner. This creates a direct clash with the Earth when the distance between them closes, so their magnetic fields engage, ultimately slowing the Earth's rotation to a stop during the passage. Sling orbit, retrograde orbit and rotation, and the magnetic alignment of Planet X are involved in how the passage of Planet X affects the Earth. While slinging past the Sun in a retrograde orbit and rotating retrograde, Planet X is also aligning with the Sun's magnetic field lines. As passing so very close to the Sun, it is forced into this alignment. So what does this mean for the hapless Earth, stuck in the heavy traffic lane and unable to get out because of particle flows on all sides, forcing her back into the middle of the eddy flow? She is aligned magnetically with the Sun, cannot leave her orbit because of her balance with flows into and out of the Sun, what we have called orbit lock. The Earth has a twisting monster approaching, about to make a passage over her head on its way out of the solar system. Since the Earth cannot leave her orbit, because of all the forces that kept her there, she cannot escape the point where Planet X will cross the Earth's orbit. She stands like deer in the heavy traffic lane, horrified but unable to move, frozen in the headlights." This is the end of Zeta Talk, Signs of Change, written in July 2005. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You've been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.